Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.
Still here with the legendary football commentator, Clive Tilsey. I know you said earlier the word great is one perhaps you use sparingly, but I'm sure you don't mind people using it for yourself. There's commentators like Martin Tyler and yourself and John Motson who kind of fall into that bracket, I guess.
We're a matter of opinion. Barry once said to me, one man's commentator is another man's pain in the backside, and it is very true. It is lovely if you are somehow associated with people's memories of a particular event. So, you know, those massive Champions League finals, 99, 2005, 2008, you know, if your voice, your soundtrack, something you said is somehow part of people's recollections of the very best moment in their football supporting career. It would be lovely if Kieran Trippier's goal had been the only goal of the World Cup semi-final. Again, you know, those... I think consumption of media has changed markedly even in the last 10 years, certainly in the last 20 years. I mean, club football in our country now is almost... Well, it is almost exclusively pay-per-view, apart from some FA Cup on the BBC. And so not only the audience is not as numerically large, but a lot of the viewing is done communally in pubs and bars where the soundtrack's nothing like as important as it is if you're absorbing it in the privacy of your own home, maybe with family or friends. So I'm not sure that the commentator's quite as much a part of the experience as it was when I grew up watching Peter O'Sullivan and Dan Maskell and Henry Longhurst and Murray Walker and indeed Reg Guttrey, all the doyens of this, what the voice of that sport. There's no longer a voice of any sport, is there? There are lots and lots of voices.
You spoke about these moments the fans remember, and we have to move on, I guess, to 1999. And I know 98 to 99 was your first season with ITV as their lead football commentator, obviously after Brian Moore retired, as you said. But a season full of twists and turns, but you certainly got lucky with the season, the opening season you got with ITV and their Champions League coverage in particular.
Yeah, I mean, as with anything, you need the material to work with. Can you not call a bad game a great game? You must not call it. You must editorialise. You must call what you see. And funny enough, the 1999 final wasn't a great game. It was a 10-minute final. But as the crowning glory of an achievement, and you know this ongoing narrative of the Schmeichel save in the last minute of the FA Cup semi-final with Giggs' goal, the semi-final replay, the being two down in 11 minutes to Juventus, and you know Keane scoring the goal, and then 8 minutes later getting the yellow card, which would rule him out of the final. I mean, that entire narrative almost begged, if you were writing it as a piece of fiction, it's pretty much how you would have written it.
There were obviously the three all draws with Barcelona in the group stage, and United played Brøndby, and even the Inter Milan quarter final is kind of lost amongst the semi final, the final, and those three all draws with Barcelona. But those two games, 12 goals across the two games with Barcelona, the Nou Camp and Old Trafford, must have been quite exciting and thrilling to be a part of so early in your ITV career.
Yeah, United scraped through that group, and you know when you are commentating on the game in Turin and even the final itself, you know they had scored three times in the Nou Camp, they had scored six in Brøndby, they had scored two in San Siro, so there was an expectation that at some stage during a game Manchester United would score some goals. And that was the hope that kills you. But that's the hope that every Manchester United fan was clinging to. And from our perspective, not only was it a big year for me, you know, following on from Brian, who'd retired after the 98 World Cup final, but it was 15 years since English hands had been on the European Cup. And, you know, 15 difficult years, 15 years, Heysel-stained years. So even though football was different in 99 as it had been in 79, I think probably in 79, if there was an English team in a European competition, I think kind of everybody got behind them. It was kind of our boys. It was almost like an international team. By 1999, it was anybody but United, or you were a United fan. But I actually believe that that night, the way they did it, the preposterous way they did it, the daring way they did it, in character with everything else they'd done that season, I think for one night only, maybe even the most hardened City fan, even the most hardened Liverpool, Leeds, West Ham fan thought, go on, enjoy your day. You'll get dog's abuse when you come to our place, even more so now. But you've done it your way, and, you know, hats off, you know, the old English phrase, hats off to you. And I think, in a way, that almost gave me the thumbs up to give it the rhetoric that I gave it. It was almost like a national team victory.
I want to talk about the miracle of Turin. So, it was April 21st, 1999, so 20 years ago this month. But the Stadio dell'Alpi, you had the likes of Didier Deschamps and Edgar Davids up against Roy Keane and in midfield. But Roy Keane in particular had quite a stunning game. I know you know Roy quite well nowadays in your capacity. I know he did work with ITV. But that performance, I know it was Roy Keane with a captain's goal when he put that header in. Inzaghi had scored the two quick-fire goals early on. But there's a great quote, because everyone remembers seeing Keane and Scholes in the suit in the Nou Camp, obviously suspended because of bookings picked up in that game in Turin. But you wrote of Keane, obviously the performance he put in after the yellow card, it is the golfer who double bogeys and plays the next hole as normal, the tennis player who double faults and then aces. So it quite nicely summarised the performance we all saw from Roy Keane that night in Turin.
Yeah, you know, when Gazza got his yellow card in the same place, was it? Which would have put him out of the World Cup final. I mean, you know, Gary Lineker, you better watch him. Because, I mean, irrespective of how the match stood, you know, Gazza had crumbled. I mean, he knew he wasn't going to play in a World Cup final. For Roy Keane to get a yellow card which ruled him out of the Champions League final, it was almost like a fly had just landed on his face and he flicked it off.
Beckham with a corner. It's towards Keane! Roy Keane with a captain's goal for Manchester United! Game on! He's pulled them back to 2-1. Keane with Beckham beyond him. It wasn't the best of passes from Blomqvist. Keane brought him down.
I think that the theatre of it would tell you that somehow his performance went up. No, he didn't. 8 minutes earlier, he'd headed the goal which got Manchester United back into the tie. That's how Roy plays. What it didn't do was it just didn't affect him. It didn't check him one bit. He'd been given an awful pass by Jesper Blomqvist. He had to go into the challenge. I mean, Paul Scholes came on and almost seemed to be on a mission to get booked. It was almost as typical of Scholes, who had that crazy challenge in him and indeed, you know, slid himself out of the final. But Roy was taking one for the team, but he was taking the biggest one you could possibly do. And he just carried on as if it hadn't happened. He just carried on. In that era, the two players that I saw who most influenced the other 21 players on the field, not just the other 10 in their colours, were Graeme Souness and Roy Keane. And it wasn't just because they were intimidating and they could do you, and they would. It wasn't just that. It was just their aura, their presence, their drive. Roy at his best just got a hold of the ball and almost like some kind of strategic game, a chess game, he just took 20 paces forward sometimes with the ball. Just, right, we'll move it forward and then we'll see where we are. Then I'll get my head up and see. But right now, we're midway inside our own half. We need to be midway. And that's how he played. He was a north-south player. He hurt you, you know, he quite literally hurt you with everything that he tried to do on a football field. And he carried on hurting Juventus that night. And listen, Inzaghi scored twice in the first 11 minutes, one beauty, one fluke. United were creating chances at that stage of the game. They created a great chance between the two Inzaghi goals. They created chances all night. You know, York and Cole, who'd had a wonderful night in Barcelona in the group stage, just had that telepathy between them was just there. They were great pals. They played the game the same way, and they were fantastic that night. But it was Roy that held it together at the time when it needed holding together. When they were two down, he scored the goal. When he got the yellow card, he didn't flinch. And I think Craig Johnston once said to me of Graeme Souness, it's like having your big brother on the field. And I think that even though Roy scared a lot of the younger United players, and actually later in his career, and I've said this to him, it didn't really help them, you know, with one or two of the things that he said. He was always trying to do it what he thought was the right way. And I think having Roy Keane on your side rather than against you must have been a massive boost for anybody in any tight corner.
The York and Cole combination that you spoke of there, so it was 34 minutes, 10 minutes after Keane's header, York scored a header of his own, and your line was, United have seen the Juventus away goal and they've raised it. And then it wasn't until the 83rd minute when York was pulled down by Peruzzi and Cole, as you said, finished it off. And then the famous line, full speed ahead, Barcelona. But obviously that's the moment where probably the treble becomes a really realistic possibility, because obviously when the two goals from Inzaghi were scored, it looked unlikely, but yeah. What a way to finish that game in Turin.
Yeah, do you know, in a way, the biggest goal in the tie was the goal that Giggs scored at the end of the first leg, because United were outplayed in the first game, and Giggs scored a goal which actually kept them in the tie at that time. But obviously then to fall two behind again and have what they had to do.
Zidane kites it in, Inzaghi was there! Less than 6 minutes played. Turn the ball across the face of goal, deflected and in. Twice in the opening 11 minutes, Filippo Inzaghi has struck for Juventus. The first was a poacher's goal. The second needed some luck. Manchester United need a minor miracle now. They're two down in no time here.
It needed a special performance, and they certainly gave it that night. It was a hugely dramatic game. Rather like the last 10 minutes of the final, suddenly there were chances at either end of the field. But once they'd got back to parity on the night and had the away goal advantage, then there was a turning of the tide in the game. And Juventus must have known that. I mean, there must be something slightly scary about playing against a team that just plays so freely away from home when you've hurt them with two goals in the first 11 minutes and still they just come back at you, and still they play, not, it wasn't carefree in any sense, but they play with a belief in their ability to score goals against you. It must be like being in a boxing ring with a guy, just keep landing blows, but then he just keeps throwing bigger ones against you. And that's what Manchester United did, really, throughout that season. They beat you 4-3.
Beckham's headed down. This is Cole. In towards York! It's 2-2! Dwight York has equalised for Manchester United! And they have seen the Juventus away goal, and they have raised it! As things stand, it's United who go through. Chance to catch your breath. Hardly a chance that Manchester United would catch Juventus after Pippo Inzaghi had scored twice in the opening 11 minutes. York, he skipped through. It's Dwight York. He's brought down by Peruzzi. Cole will finish it off. Full speed ahead, Barcelona. Manchester United are in sight of the European Cup final again. Andy Cole has surely made that a certainty now. Call it destiny, call it fate, but Manchester United have reached the European Cup final again.
May 26th then was the final in Nou Camp. Obviously a night which, you are forever linked with that night in Barcelona, but were you soaking up the atmosphere in Barcelona, in the city, in the days in advance, or was it the type of thing where you would fly in on the day or the day before? What's the build-up to a Champions League final like that for you?
Well, we had the FA Cup final on ITV on the Saturday. And funny enough, that's where the line that I used on the eve of the FA Cup final, I remember hearing as I was driving, I stayed in a hotel at Wembley the night before, and Mark Lawrenson was on radio, probably Radio 2, they're now Radio 5, and he was asked for a prediction of the FA Cup final, and he said, well, it won't be Manchester United nil, that's for sure, you know, they always score, and I suppose that came into my mind at that crucial moment during the Champions League final. It wasn't statistically true that they always scored that season, but they certainly usually scored a couple. Once the FA Cup final was out of the way, I think I travelled to Barcelona the day before. It was beautiful in Barcelona, and Brian was there. Brian Moore, my predecessor, was there. He was doing some corporate work for UEFA, and I actually had lunch with him on the day of the game, which was great for me. You know, I felt prepared, felt fairly relaxed, and he said some nice things to me. We'd had a leaving dinner for him probably about 4 or 5 months earlier at ITV, and I'd sat next to him, and we both like our red wine, and we got about you know, probably two-thirds of the way through our third bottle, and at the end of this dinner he said to me, there's only two things you need to remember, and I remember my head sort of fuzzy head saying, oh no, he's going to give me the secret commentary here, and I'm not going to remember this in the morning. And he said, be on time and be warm enough. And I thought, is that it? And as we had lunch that day, he referred to this. He said, you know what I was saying, don't you? And I said, well, yeah, kind of, you know, don't blow it, you know, don't let a stupid thing on. And he said, no, he said, I was saying you're ready, you're good enough, just make sure you're not cold and make sure you're there. It was my way of saying you're ready, and that was a lovely thing to say to me on the day. And I do sort of liaise with quite a lot of the younger commentators, and it's really rewarding when people ask you for advice, and you can input hopefully in some sense of the way that people like Brian Moore and Reg Guttridge did for me. So yeah, I was in a good frame of mind. I had Ron Atkinson alongside me, who was a really good friend and a very, very good co-commentator at the time. He was obviously sat alongside me the fateful night in Monaco when he ended his career, and that's a completely different story. He was very, very good for me at the time. So I was surrounded by familiar faces. I had the support of you know, Alec helped me with his team lineup for the day, told me what he was going to do. So I couldn't have been better prepared.
I'm sure you're quite glad for a number of reasons that the final 5 minutes happened, not least because of the Mario Basler free kick, and perhaps Peter Schmeichel was at fault for putting you off a little bit.
Youngster's got some catching up to do. Bumps Carlsen Jäger on the edge of the box. It's Basler.
Yeah, I mean, 10 minutes from the end of the game, I was thinking my first major European final, it's been a shocker. United are going to lose, and there's only been one goal, and I've got it wrong, because Basler's early free kick, because Schmeichel, who was arguably the best single player in that team, if you were talking about who is the best in the world in their position, Schmeichel might have, even with Keno and even with Beckham, Schmeichel may have been the one you would have chosen. So we're talking about arguably the best player in the team. And he just looked like he'd been beaten by deflection. It looked, because he hardly moved. And I said deflected and in. And of course, when the replay came up, it hadn't touched the water at all. So yeah, that's where I was with 10 minutes to go. And then Scholl hit the post. And then Janka hit the bar. And Mateus went off to take his comfort break to wash his hands, get ready for the trophy presentation. And, the story was this great movie was going to end with a terrible final scene. But there were just inklings that for the first time in the game, and Solskjaer didn't come on to the 81st minute. Teddy came on kind of midway through the second half. But Ollie had a chance with his first touch. He had a pretty good-headed, sharp-headed chance. And then they had another couple of sights of goal, and it was as much in the way of pressure as Manchester United had managed all night long. And obviously the goals were a shock to everybody's system. I think one of my most indelible memories of the night was the dazed look on the faces of the Bayern fans. It looked like they'd witnessed an alien landing. They really did. And we'd never seen that with German fans before. You know, Englishmen, we'd never seen German fans in shock. We'd only ever seen them, you know, at our expense. So, I couldn't say that I felt the finish coming, but there had been signs in the 4 or 5 minutes beforehand that United might just equalise.
You felt that, obviously, when Beckham, I think, was it Beckham won the first? I know Beckham won one corner and Neville won another, but...
Ollie's cross for the second, yeah.
When you're saying things like, can Manchester United score, they always score, you sounded like you believed it, and this was actually destined to be a Manchester United treble year.
Can Manchester United score? They always score. The big goalie's coming up. Peter Schmeichel is forward. Can he score another in Europe? He's got one in Europe already.
Beckham. In towards Schmeichel. It's come for Dwight York. Cleared. Giggs with a shot. Sheringham! Name on the trophy. Teddy Sheringham, with 30 seconds of added time play, has equalised for Manchester United. They are still in the European Cup.
Yeah, I have to say that throwing forward 6 years to probably another line which might, you know, people might remember, which is when Steven Gerrard scored the first of Liverpool's three in 6 minutes. I said something like, hello, hello. Mm. And when you look back on the tape of that game, there was absolutely no suggestion that there was anything more to come, because it was Liverpool's first threat of the entire night. And by the way, they scored three times in 6 minutes and then didn't threaten again until the penalty shootout. But whereas United had not threatened and should have been buried going into, you know, with 5 minutes to go, there was just a little glimmer, just a little sparkle came back into them with... And Solskjaer, you know, Solskjaer certainly brought that to the party. There was just a feeling. They're only one down, you know. They could have been three down, but they're only one down. You know, you've all been into that with your team. And at that moment, I'd grown up a Manchester United fan. I wasn't... a hard and my sort of support for any football team had sort of dribbled away with my dream job, you know, and being close to people and knowing people in the game who became personal friends and knowing their families and stuff. But of course, for me, for ITV, we wanted a United equaliser, and there was just a suggestion that it might be coming.
That split second moment when The corner from Beckham is flicked on by Sheringham and Solskjaer sticks out a boot and it goes into the top of the net. I mean, are those minutes a blur for you? What's the reaction in the press room? Are you looking around, gauging the reaction of other people? Do you remember that specific moment? You're obviously looking down to see maybe Sir Alex Ferguson on the bench, how they're reacting as well. But do you remember that specific, I guess, 30, 60 seconds?
No.
Feel this is their year.
They must be playing defensive. Schmeichel's not coming up for this one. Thinks he's done enough.
Is this their moment? Beckham into Sheringham and Solskjaer has won it. Manchester United have reached the promised land. Two substitutes have scored the two goals in stoppage time, and the treble looms large.
Now you remember it by watching it back. I think I'm in a pretty tight bubble of concentration during the course of the game. I did throw my arm across Ron when the Solskjaer goal went in. He picked his microphone up, and I did thrust my arm across him in order to buy that time. I mean, we had a kind of an unwritten not rule, but an unwritten understanding that I sort of did the words, and then when the replay started, I was finished, and that's where you come in. That you tell us how, I tell us if, you tell us how. But you know, we've all heard that moment where the co-commentator, the you know, the Andy Gray with Steven Gerrard's goal against Panathinaikos, you beauty. That sometimes you break the rules and it's brilliant. But at that moment, I didn't want him to break the rule. I wanted to buy that time, and I think we're probably both glad that happened. But that's all I can really recall. Do you know, Terry Venables was on our panel that night, and of all the football people that I've been privileged to spend really quality time with, Terry was the best at moving cups around a table and actually explaining football to you. He had a really sharp and inventive tactical mind, but he had a way of communicating what he was thinking to, you know, some open-mouthed 18-year-old footballer, and also to somebody like me who'd never really kicked a ball properly. And I remember his analysis of the Sheringham goal, that if you remember, the ball was cleared and then scuffed back into the penalty area. And he said that most strikers would have turned with their back to the goal at that moment, facing the play. And as the ball had come into him, he would have still had his back to goal, and he wouldn't have had the ability to turn and score. He could have only laid it off. But Teddy, being so bright, only ever got on the half turn. So that even though he scuffed it into the net, all he had to do was help it on its way when it came to him. I remember that analysis. I remember walking away thinking, wow, yeah, you know. But that, I just thought that was a television gem, really. Everything else, I think I probably... I actually walked back to our hotel that night. We were only staying about a 15-minute walk from the Nou Camp. And I was kind of conscious that I'd given it the big finish and used lots of words and, you know, promised land, a bit Old Testament. And I was aware that we are in 1999 now, and there will be a lot of people who didn't want United to win back at home. And we actually had Sky News in the room, and I turned it on, and it the celebrations, even though they were in Manchester, they had the tone of a national victory. As I say, 15 years, Germans beaten, United doing it their way. I think there was almost a sense of, as I say, almost forgiveness, sympathy, just a grudging well done from everybody that night, which probably gave me the right to sell it with the kind of verbose rhetoric that I used at the time. I think I got away with it. Yeah.
You've referenced the reaction of the Bayern players, and the immediacy after the Solskjaer goal, and of course after the full time whistle as well, almost to me resembles like a dramatic performance, like a play, when you see Sami Kufur screaming, beating at the ground, and was it Matthias on the bench?
The greatest television interview ever given.
Fantastic.
The most lucid television interview ever given. Football, bloody hell.
The new European champions, the treble, the dream come true for you.
Oh, I can't believe it. I can't believe it. Football, bloody hell. But they never give in. And that's the winner.
Absolutely fantastic. So I mean, you must have thought it gone there with just a few seconds left. Yeah. You sent Schmeichel up.
Yeah, I didn't say anything about it. He went on his own.
Did he? Right.
But anyway, fantastic. I'm so proud of my players.
Well done, Alex. You better get back there and celebrate. Fantastic.
And then, of course, Bobby Charlton, very emotional afterwards. So the whole thing felt like a dramatic performance that had the perfect...
Fergie could have claimed that moment for himself. You know, when Gary Newbon stuck the microphone in front of him and asked the correct question, that sometimes television interviewers are ridiculed for how does it feel. There's only one question to ask: how does it feel? And Fergie could have claimed that moment and pointed out the two greatest substitutions that any manager's ever made and the spirit of Manchester, but no, football. But I mean, sometimes the most seismic moments in football are actually beyond analysis or explanation. It's just football. It's just happened. It has happened to us. We didn't make it happen. It's just happened to us. And then later you start to piece together, you know, the fact that Solskjaer always watched games from the bench and was always looking at how he could influence a game, you know, when he came on, where he could make an impact. And you can start. Then you've got Sheringham square, you know, not with his back to goal, but square on to help. Then you can start to add the analysis and the explanation. But actually, at that moment, it is just the ending of the movie that you never saw coming.
You said at the end, I think it was just after the Solskjaer goal as well, nobody will ever win a European Cup final more dramatically than this.
Marble. Cleared by Butt. History is made. Manchester United are the champions of Europe again, and nobody will ever win a European Cup final more dramatically than this.
And I think that, Istanbul notwithstanding, but I guess in many ways it kind of trumps Istanbul for sheer excitement. You had the build-up to penalties.
Be careful
now. a lot of Liverpool fans watching. But do you still stand by that? That's kind of a moment that we certainly, maybe in a generation, won't see again.
Well, I'm not much of a snooker player, but you only get a few chances at the black, which adds up to 147. And it's not however well you've left it, it's still that there's no way that even Ronnie can lean over the table and think it's just another black. You've got to go all the way back to the beginning again. And this had started in August. This was the one shot that they were ever likely to get at the treble, and so it's that. I mean, it's the completion not just of winning this match and winning the European Cup on what would have been Sir Matt Busby's birthday and all of those things, that they're never going to come together again. I think Sir Alec would tell you, and it's great to see him looking so well. I wonder whether he was ever going to tell us anything at one stage. But, I mean, he looks great again. And I'm sure, and he said this many times, we should have won it many, many more times. He said that over and over again about Manchester United. And, to have played Real Madrid at Hampden, and I think he knew that all the near misses that he had after 99, that was the one. You're just not going to get that. It's the perfect storm. It's not going to all come together again. And that was a perfect storm, and it was their one shot, probably ever, at completing a treble, and certainly to complete it in the way that they did. And so there must be a sense almost of shock at the end that you've somehow, from the depths of despair, snatched this chance and taken it. And nobody will ever take it away from you. You see the celebrations and you think that David May scored both of the United goals because he's holding the trophy in nearly every... and didn't get on the field, Maisie, he's holding the trophy. But why not? If I'm sort of talking in a corporate situation, give people a choice in a room. I can make you Open Gold champion, Wimbledon champion, 100 metres Olympic gold medalist, or I can make you a World Cup winner in football, rugby, cricket, whatever you want to be. Do you want to win as an individual? Do you want to win as a team? And as a golfer, I just think, what would it feel like to win a Masters? I mean, okay, you've got a caddy, you've got a coach, you've got your family, you've got your agent, well, all these sort of people. But actually, there's only ever been two hands on the grip. It is an individual thing. You have done it. And I always think that is the best bottle of red wine that they can find in Augusta for you to sit down at a table with whoever you choose and just slowly drink it. To win as a team, it's champagne. It's bubble. It's lots of hugs. And you see it at the Ryder Cup. These incredibly individual sportsmen coming together and just acting crazy, doing things that they wouldn't normally do. The whole sort of Fleetwood Molinari thing, way out of character with golfers. But it's what team sport does to you. And for that moment, all these guys were in it together. It was their one shot to do it together. And they'll have that together for the rest of their lives. And when they come back together again for the various dinners and tribute matches for the 20 years, nobody can ever break into that circle. That's theirs. That belongs to them. And that is sport at its very finest.
I should say to people listening on podcast or watching on YouTube or wherever they're streaming this, that you have brought along notes from your Champions League research, I guess, and various Republic of Ireland matches as well in the Trapattoni era. We will tweet those out from the off the ball account, just so people can maybe have an insight into what goes on in your head pre-game. I also have for people as well. You'll probably recognise that. That's one of my holy grails. It's a match programme from the Champions League final.
My notes from the 1999 final are only a copy, because Sir Alex took the original, gave a big donation to charity, to the Bobby Moore Bowel Cancer Fund, and he had them framed in his office.
He was obviously a fan of the last few minutes of commentary then, if he had them framed.
We never discussed the commentary, but I think just as a piece of record, you see the notes, that they are kind of a nice record of who was involved in that moment. And so he had that, and equally when they won in Moscow, he asked me for the notes from 2008. So he had them both framed side by side.
Clive, you've been very good with your time. I suppose just to finish up, I've interviewed at different stages. I'm a bit of a space geek, so I've interviewed a few Apollo astronauts and these now ancient guys who've walked on the moon during the American moon landing program in between 69 and 72. A lot of them kind of talk about how they're asked similar questions. The first question everyone asks them is, what does it feel like to walk on the moon? And it's such a simple and yet very wide-ranging question. But I guess my question for you is, are you asked similar questions when you get people on the street? Do you get people on the street? I mean, not for me, Clive, is a famous Townsend line, but do you get, when people realise who you are and come up and chat to you, are there often very similar conversations, or how do people approach chatting to the commentator, Clive Tilsley?
This is the only job that I ever wanted to do. When I did my first local radio commentary, the dream had kind of come true. I mean, as with any, you know, with any dream, there's another one and another one, and you want to do an FA Cup final, you want to do a Champions League final, you'd like to do England in a World Cup final, and so on. But once I had broken through into the business, I started to appreciate how lucky I was to be doing something that I really, really wanted to do. And I think it's probably appreciation of people to whom you are part of their memories that actually amplifies that more than anything. We don't save anybody's life. You know, my elderly father has had a couple of falls recently, and I've been in A&E with him. And, you know, without trying to be sanctimonious in any way, those people every day are doing jobs far, far more significant, far better than I have ever done, and for far less money. And I am in awe of them. Sometimes the question people ask is something like, how do you remember the names? How do you prevent yourself from swearing at that? And actually, they're very much the same as walking on the moon. Well, I don't. I'm concentrating. I'm at work. And it's a really boring answer, and it's really disappointing for them, because there is actually nothing very romantic about the job other than doing it, other than having a love for football and being able to pursue that love, not as a player. I was never remotely good enough ever to be a professional footballer, but as probably the next best thing, as somebody who is actually involved in these great occasions. When I go to a football match and I'm not working, I feel like a spare part. So the whole build-up to the broadcast, I love television as much as I love football. I love the whole notion of that communication thing that I've been trying to talk to you about tonight. But to go to a game and to be in some way a very, very small part of it is as rewarding as, you know, just about anything beyond the obvious thing of, you know, loving my wife and children and my health. But, you know, after those things, this is as good as it could be.
Well said, Clive. And look, you've been more than generous with your time. Lots of Irish fans of Manchester United, Liverpool and every other club that grew up listening to your voice. And plenty of beautiful stories there that people can reflect on. And look, really appreciate your time this afternoon.
And find me a plot, because when we leave the EU, I'm coming to live with you.
Off the ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.